Press Conference USA. Here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA senior TV correspondent Chris Simpkins. Hate crimes are on the rise in the United States. The number of hate crimes reported in the U.S. jumped by 17% last year, the largest increase since 2001, when the terrorist hijackings on 9/11 fueled a surge in attacks on Americans of Muslim and Arab ancestry. These are the results from the FBI's annual hate crime report, released in November. The report came 2 weeks after a gunman killed 11 Jews at a synagogue in Pittsburgh, leading civil rights advocates to slam the Trump administration for failing to do more to stem the rising tide of hate crime. The shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh is believed to be the deadliest attack on the Jewish community in the history of the United States. The FBI defines a hate crime as a criminal offense against a person or property motivated in whole or in part by an offender's bias against a religion, race, disability, sexual orientation, ethnicity, gender, or gender identity. The victims represent a cross-section of society, with African Americans and Jews the most frequently targeted victims in America today. Our special guest on this edition of the program is George Saleem. He's Senior Vice President of Programs at the Anti-Defamation League, or ADL. That's a nonprofit international civil rights organization which takes an active role in fighting hate crimes. As Senior Vice President, George Saleem leads the Anti-Defamation League's education, law enforcement, and community security programs, and oversees the work of the organization's Center on Extremism. Jonathan Greenblatt, CEO and National Director of ADL, said that the FBI report provides further evidence that more must be done to address the divisive climate of hate in America. On this edition of the program, we'll talk with George Saleem, ADL Senior Vice President, about the various factors behind the recent rise in hate crimes in America. Prior to his position at ADL, George Saleem served in the administrations of Presidents George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump. And George Saleem joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. George, welcome to the program.
Great. Thank you for having me today.
And as always, so delighted to welcome my colleague, VOA senior TV reporter Chris Simpkins.
Pleasure to be with you, Carol.
Well, George Saleem, just quickly, I remember when ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, was actually part of the Jewish organization B'nai B'rith, a worldwide brotherhood organization. Mm-hmm. And when ADL was primarily trying to combat anti-Semitism, but now, of course, it's championing all forms of discrimination against religious and ethnic minorities, is now a standalone organization.
That's correct. And just to expand on that point, the very noble and historic mission of the ADL, which is now over 100 years old, is to combat discrimination and defamation against the Jewish people in this country, but also to work to secure justice and fair treatment for all people in this country. And that twofolded mission of the ADL is what makes it such a unique organization to combat discrimination, anti-Semitism, and bigotry in today's modern times.
Well, let's pick up on the most recent FBI report, which documented an uptick in hate crimes in this country, more than 17% over last year. To what do you, George Saleem, attribute the rise in hate crimes over the past years, this past year in particular?
What's important to point out with the increased FBI statistics that we just saw is that 17% increase is already on top of a 5% increase in 2016. So what we see here isn't just a single year anomaly. What we see here is a pattern of multi-year escalation of hate crimes and bias-based crimes that are due to a whole host of factors. And on top of that, we know that there is historic underreporting of hate crimes and bias-based crimes. And so while the 17% increase in calendar year 2017 is disturbing, we know that it's coupled with historic trends that we've seen on the rise of anti-Semitism and bias-motivated crimes against Jews and Jewish institutions in this country. So there's really a number of factors at play here.
I have so many more questions, but let me let my colleague Chris jump in now.
And George, you talked about the FBI has acknowledged that its statistics undercount hate crimes, in part because they're based on voluntary reporting by local law enforcement agencies. How much more do we have to do in telling people how to report these hate crimes, and how important is it that we get the counts right to know what we're dealing with?
So while it's critically important to get the message out like we're doing here today for individuals to ensure that, hate crimes and bias-motivated crimes are reported, it's also important to point out that there were more than 90 cities across the United States that have a population of over 100,000 individuals that either told the FBI that they had zero hate crimes to report, nor did they report anything affirmatively whatsoever. So we know that in major cities and municipalities across this country, there continues to be underreporting. And part of the goal of ADL is to work hand in hand with federal, state, and local officials to ensure that we get a more comprehensive look at the full picture of hate crimes and bias-based crimes in this country.
And we talked about people not really knowing how to report hate crimes. We should do a better job informing people how to go about reporting hate crimes to their local authorities?
Absolutely. And we know that in many communities, in communities of color, in minority communities, in immigrant communities in this country, there is an inherent fear of reporting hate crimes and bias-based crimes in fear that there is some type of immigration kind of reprisal that could be at play. And so we know that in Latino communities across this country, where we've seen a significant uptick, specifically a 24% increase in reports according to the FBI data, that there continues to be underreporting in Latino communities across this country. So it's really a twofold mission. The first is to get municipal officials and public leaders to do more to report, and also for civil society organizations like the ADL, as we continue to partner with organizations like Mexican consulates and other institutions that are trusted in Latino and other communities across this country to affirmatively report hate crimes or bias-motivated crimes.
George, let's get to what are the factors that are fueling what we're seeing in this country, this latent hate and prejudice, particularly anti-Semitism and discrimination against African Americans. I mean, just last year, we saw neo-Nazis marching in Charlottesville. We had President Trump saying that there's blame to be assigned on both sides. This caused an enormous amount of alarm. Some analysts are actually saying that there is a correlation between inflammatory political rhetoric and policies and an uptick in violence. Would you agree?
The analysis from the ADL clearly states that hate speech leads to hate crimes. And it's clear that hateful rhetoric and hate speech leads to hate crimes across this country, and I think these numbers bear it out. While anti-Semitic rhetoric, or quote-unquote dog whistling, is allowed in our public square without condemnation, especially from our public leaders, it gives the green light to the anti-Semites to keep spouting it, or in the worst case, as in Charlottesville, acting upon it. And ADL believes it's incumbent on all leaders at the federal, state, and local level, no matter their party and no matter their ideology or industry, to condemn anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and xenophobia in the strongest possible terms and all forms of hate whenever and wherever it occurs.
Well, let me just press you just a little bit on the Trump administration in particular, because we are seeing this anti-immigrant sentiment on the rise, given Mr. Trump's position on immigration, both legal and illegal, characterizing many immigrants as terrorists or criminals, which is an overstatement. And once again, this sort of equivocation of, well, there's bad people on both sides. I mean, to what extent does this sort of ambivalence and dog whistling feel grievances and without any evidence blaming minority groups for their problems?
While we know that hate speech, in fact, leads to hate crimes, as the numbers bear out, I want to make sure I point out that this is bigger than one particular person or one particular party. And that's why ADL believes it's really incumbent on all parties and all leaders to step forward and to speak out forcefully. The reality is, whether it's coming from the President of the United States or the President of the PTA in a local community across this country, words have consequences, and individuals need to be held accountable for what they say and potential cases of incitement across this country.
George, how much does social media play a role in spreading hate? We see people with anonymous profiles posting material on social media that's absolutely outrageous.
So social media plays a significant contributing factor to the spread of anti-Semitism, hate speech, as well as an accelerant for individuals like the alleged shooter in the Pittsburgh synagogue, which is, as was outlined at the outset of this program, the worst anti-Semitic attack against the Jewish community in this country in our nation's history. The social media platforms of all stripes, irrespective of which company or which platform, act as an accelerant for conspiracy theories and hateful ideologies to spread. And when there are individuals on the other end of computers or phones who receive those types of ideas and take that as a form of inspiration or call to action, that's when we see the types of hate or bias-filled incidents like we saw play out in Charlottesville in August of 2017, or that are the intellectual underpinnings for the type of anti-Semitic murderous acts that we saw take place in Pittsburgh just a few months ago.
So would you favor social media companies doing more to try to prevent these types of postings that we're seeing of hate?
So ADL has been at the forefront as a leader on civil rights issues of working with social media and other technology companies to enhance terms of service use for what is and what isn't permissible on their platforms. ADL was one of the first organizations to open up an office in Silicon Valley to work on these issues day in and day out. Our Center on Technology and Society has been on the forefront of these really disturbing patterns and trends that we see, because the next battle on civil rights will not be fought over a bridge in Selma or in Montgomery. It's going to be fought on Facebook or on other types of social media platforms. And so we think it's important to work hand in hand for civil society organizations like ours to partner with social media companies to find the right ratio, to find the right application so that free speech can continue to flourish on these platforms, but incitement can be taken off.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is George Salim. He's Senior Vice President of Programs at the Anti-Defamation League, and we're talking about the rise in hate crimes in America. I'm Carol Castiel, along with Senior VOA TV Correspondent Chris Simpkins. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You can also find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab. You may follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a shout out to a valued listener and Facebook fan, Hadi Milani from Tehran, Iran. If you want to hear your name on the air, give us some feedback on this show and send an email to PCUSA@VOANews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. We're back to our guest, George Salim. And George, let's take a look at a profile of the actual perpetrators that we're seeing who are perpetrating these hate crimes of late. I've read that in particular, white men who hold this belief, somehow exaggerated by rhetoric and politics and media, that they are sort of protecting their culture, race, and what they perceive as sort of an endangered way of life that historically actually placed them on top. Now, critics would say, well, that doesn't make sense. This is the United States of America. We're a multicultural nation. It's a big pie. When you give rights to some groups or somehow expand their sense of justice and rights, that doesn't take away from anyone. Who are the perpetrators? Is that an accurate profile?
So what's important to note is that there is not one unique demographic and there isn't one unique profile. If you look through some of the images in the events that took place in Charlottesville in August of 2017, this was not the historic images in American history of the Ku Klux Klan or of the Aryan Nation or of neo-Nazis as we've come as Americans to historically understand it. This was individuals between the ages of 18 and 35 who wore khaki pants and button-downs and polo shirts and wore blue blazers. There is a new generation of bigotry and anti-Semitism in this country that cloaks itself in a modernization of both clothing and temperament as an attempt to really mainstream hate. And ADL has really released a number of reports on these issues. The great researchers at our Center on Extremism have put forth in the past 12 months a number of research reports and pieces that have really chronicled and analyzed how mainstreaming of this hate-filled culture has become part and parcel to this movement and has allowed it to flourish and grow.
But nonetheless, they could be categorized as white supremacist groups.
Absolutely. And what's important to note is that they hold the same ideology as white supremacist and Ku Klux Klan type groups have done in the past 50 years, except they masked themselves in modern attire. And what we're used to as the hoods and the cross burnings and the tattoos from head to toe, that's gone away with. And there's more of a mainstreaming of this neo-Nazi white supremacist ideology in this country. But it's still at its core the same type of hate-filled, anti-Semitic, bias-based ideology that has been persistent in our nation's history for the past 50-plus years.
As an African-American growing up in the South in North Carolina, I grew up with my parents teaching me about hate groups like the Ku Klux Klan, who operated in North Carolina, in rural areas mostly. But I was touched when, in 1979, November, a caravan of 10 cars carrying about 40 Ku Klux Klan members and American Nazi Party members drove into a predominantly black neighborhood in Greensboro to as a part of another demonstration that was Death to the Klan. And these Klan members got out of their car, Nazi Party members got out of their car and opened fire on a crowd of Communist Worker Party members, killing five people, wounding 11. Now, these individuals, five people, were charged with murder and acquitted by an all-white jury. And then in a second federal criminal civil rights trial, it ended with the same result, with the Ku Klux Klan members being acquitted, basically saying this was a politically motivated crime instead of a racially motivated crime, and that the Ku Klux Klan and the Nazi Party members were trying to protect themselves. I guess my question to you is, how do we go about getting convictions of these type of crimes and they're not labeled as political motivated, but calling them what they are, and that the intention of these Ku Klux Klan members and Nazi Party members was racially motivated?
So this is an incredibly important issue. Thank you for raising it. What you're really pointing to is the heart of why hate crimes and bias-motivated crimes are so important that we get better reporting and we get these statistics out on an annualized basis. The essence of hate crimes are not that they are against a protected group. We know that they are. But the focus of why someone commits an act of terror or an act of hate against an individual because of their race, color, ethnicity, religion, or because of their sexual orientation is because that type of act of fear or kind of violence is meant to really sow fear in the hearts of not just that person or their family, but really in that broader community that's a protected group of citizens in some way, shape, or form that's a minority in our society. And so the insidious reality of hate crimes and bias-motivated crimes is not just the criminal act that's committed, but the fear that's intended to be struck through an entire community. And that's why we need to push back so forcefully. That's why, as you see after the events in Pittsburgh this year, the former Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, called it an act of domestic terrorism. I believe instances like this that rise to a certain threshold that are beyond just a hate crime that's motivated by race, color, sexual orientation, or religion. In many instances, like we saw in Pittsburgh, these are acts of domestic terrorism that are intended to sow fear really within communities, minority community groups across this country. And I think more needs to be done to have a moral level of equivalency with acts of domestic terrorism in the same way that we do with international terrorism.
I hate to bring you back to our current political leadership, George, but with respect to domestic terrorism, the Trump administration, Mr. Trump in particular, has praised nationalism and accuses generally foreigners of fomenting domestic terrorism. And, of course, we know he refused to outright condemn the neo-Nazi march in Charlottesville. So once again, it's all well and good to know that we need to do more, but when we have leaders at this level equivocating or assigning blame to something that really isn't responsible for what we're seeing, the uptick in hate crimes, it's not foreigners fomenting domestic terrorism. These are Americans. So again, the linkage is there.
while there are a number of very divisive elements to this discord that plays out on a national level, I think one of the important elements that gets lost here when it comes to these instances of radicalization and recruitment, either by foreign terrorist organizations or by domestic ones here in this country, is that there needs to be a greater capacity for preventing and intervening in this process of radicalization and recruitment, similar to the groups that are neo-Nazi or white supremacist ideologies. In the same way that they recruit, there's been many similar tactics that ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and foreign terrorist organizations employ. Earlier in the show, we talked about the role of social media and on various online platforms. The type of mainstreaming of content from both foreign terrorist organizations as well as from domestic hate groups, there are a number of similarities in pattern and scope in which these groups recruit and radicalize individuals to commit acts of terror in the homeland, and more needs to be focused on opportunities in which federal, state, and local law enforcement, together with civil society organizations, offer opportunities to prevent and intervene in that process to hopefully prevent acts like a synagogue shooting or a Charlottesville protest to happen again.
I suppose it doesn't help in America that we have lax gun laws, so that someone who espouses these hateful beliefs is also able to get access to weapons to cause deadly havoc. So I suppose the nexus is also a particular problem in this country.
I mean, certainly individuals who are being radicalized to commit an act of violence should not have access freely and openly to weapons, but the gun control debate on these issues is probably another subject for another show.
Let me ask you, with respect to the focus on how to prevent hate crimes and acts of violent extremism, I believe that the Trump administration currently is focusing its countering violent extremism programs predominantly on threats perceived by Muslims, even black identity extremists. Is that still the case? And is that a problem in your view, if they're ignoring that the real threats, or most of the threats, are actually emanating from white supremacist groups and neo-Nazi groups or other kinds of extremist domestic groups?
In the past year and a half since I've left the federal government, where my most recent position at Homeland Security was leading an interagency group on countering all forms of violent extremism, we've seen a significant reduction in both the dollars put in place to fund programs combating and preventing all forms of violent extremism, as well as the federal staff dedicated to doing this. While this administration has reported they remain committed to this issue, some of the numbers just don't add up in terms of the reduction of the funding for this and a reduction in the staff.
How about the focus? For example, do the data about national security threats and domestic terrorism justify a focus on black identity extremism or Muslims, for example, when at least we're seeing from the statistics that there are other groups that are more threatening, particularly coming from Caucasian males?
Sure. So I can't speak to some of the inside government work that's happened since I've left. But what I can say is that it's imperative that the federal government continue to focus on all forms of extremism and not solely look at international foreign terrorist organizations. The fact is, as the ADL has reported, that in the past decade, over 70% of acts of ideologically motivated violence, that's a murder or a homicide that's committed in the name of an ideology in the U.S., has been at the hands of a right-wing, white supremacist-type ideology, not at the hands of a foreign terrorist organization like a Sunni extremist group, like an ISIS or an Al-Qaeda, etc. And so what we know is that domestic terror, domestic murder and homicide continues to be the overwhelming majority of violent extremism that we see play out across all 50 states.
And of course, you don't even need a report, but we're seeing the demonization of Hungarian-born Jew George Soros. This poor gentleman, he escaped the Holocaust, and it seems as if his only crime is to defend, you know, the cause of free speech, the international liberal order. And he has been demonized to such an extent, and this is simply anti-Semitism, pure and simple.
This goes beyond the threshold of just purely anti-Semitic rhetoric, and this goes into the category of criminality, pure and simple. I mean, it's one thing to criticize individuals because of their political leanings one way or another, and if they happen to be Jewish, factoring in the conspiracy theories and the anti-Semitic tropes, is unacceptable and should not be permitted, irrespective of ideology or political leanings. And ADL has commented widely and written extensively on the type of anti-Semitic attacks against Soros and other public officials and the espousing of these type of anti-Semitic tropes as unacceptable in the public square.
The incoming chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, a Democrat, Jerry Nadler, said that when the Democrats take over the chamber, that they will investigate the rise in hate crimes and how the Trump administration or Mr. Trump's policies and rhetoric may be even enabling it.
Well, look, I think the numbers from last calendar year, as reported by the FBI, number one, on hate crimes overall, and as the ADL has reported widely, the 57% uptick in anti-Semitic incidents in calendar year 2017, these are numbers that warrant not just the Congress to look at, but really state houses across the country, and for all communities to take stock of what are we doing here to stop the spread of anti-Semitism, hate speech, and bias-motivated incidents in our communities.
And as I said before, the report is damning, but anecdotal evidence supports those of us who live here in America. We're seeing a drift backwards. It's really astounding how it's as if we're going back to the 1930s with the discrimination and hate speech against African-Americans, Jews, Muslims, who are part and parcel of our larger multicultural community.
While the statistics are indeed troubling, the statistics also don't tell the full picture. And what we see that helped me remain optimistic and help part of the broader ADL community remain optimistic is one of the largest donors or contributors to the families of the victims of the synagogue massacre was in fact the local Muslim community and broader Pittsburgh. And we see instances across the country where communities are reaching out to one another in times of need and in times of dire situations, where we see African-American and Caucasian, African-American and Jewish communities come together. We see Muslim and Jewish communities come together. We see Christian and other faith groups coming together to support one another. And these are the stories that are happening in cities and counties across the country that need to be lifted up and shared more broadly.
It's a tragedy that these type of incidents have to happen, though, for the community to come together. But, George, you talked about the tragedy in Charlottesville. And just recently, a Virginia jury recommended a life prison sentence, over 400 years, for the individual who was convicted of driving into the crowd of counter-demonstrators, killing a young woman in the process and injuring scores of others. We had another recent incident here in outside Washington, D.C., in Fairfax County, Virginia, where a young man was just charged and convicted and sentenced to 21 months in jail for vandalizing a Jewish community center with swastikas and posting anti-Semitic flyers on a local Virginia community college campus. I guess my question is for you, is this the kind of message we need to send, that if you commit hate crimes, it will not be tolerated, number one, but also you will face severe punishment? And some people might say, well, this young man, 21 years old, he vandalized a Jewish community center. Should he get almost 2 years in jail for that crime? Do we need to do a better job at sending a stronger message in terms of prosecutions of these cases and making sure the individuals go to jail for a long time?
Well, we know we need to do more on hate crimes across this country at the federal, state, local, and municipal levels, period, full stop. A message does need to be sent loud and clear that the communities that have the most at risk should be protected and the strongest sentences should come with that. That being said, some of the pictures and some of the visuals that have come out after the Jewish Community Center desecration that you mentioned and other instances where you see the community come out and stand with, whether it's Jewish community leaders or whether it's Muslim community leaders after anti-Muslim or other types of xenophobic incidents take place, what we know is that communities can come together and overcome these instances of hateful expression of ideology or bigotry in some way, and that the erasing of whether it's the swastikas that are spray painted on the side of a Jewish community center or outside of a mosque or temple or synagogue in some way, shape, or form, it's these instances that really show the finest aspects of American communities that should be lifted up.
George Salim is Senior Vice President of Programs at the Anti-Defamation League. based here in Washington, in the Washington office. George, thank you so much for coming in, shedding light on the factors that are driving this terrible trend in the rise of hate crimes here in America.
Thank you for having me today.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Aydin Utko, and joining me on the program was senior VOA TV correspondent Chris Simpkins. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
This is...